In our new series, Debut Discussions, we're asking debut authors to tell us their story, not only the story in the one they wrote, but the journey they took to hold that book in their hands. On today's episode, we welcome my good friend, amazing writer, Amanda Churchill. Amanda is a writer living in Texas. Her work has been featured in Hobart Pulp, Witness, and River Styx, among other publications. She was a Writers League of Texas 2021 fellow and holds a Master's of Art in Creative Writing from the University of North Texas. Her debut novel, The Turtle House, is out now. Welcome to Pop Fiction Women, Amanda.
Thank you so much. It's so much fun. I've listened to your show so many times on my drives around town that it's just exciting.
Yay.
I feel like I know y'all. Well, I know you, Corinne, but I feel like I know both of y'all.
I was going to say, I think you actually do know, Corinne. I love that our voices are in your head for your walks or drives. So it's very nice to meet you, though.
Nice to meet you.
And we want to talk about the Turtle House, of course. We're going to get into that. But with our debut authors, we love to start with you as a reader, because writers are readers. So tell us your story as a reader.
As a reader, I was one of those kids that would bring the book to the restaurant and my parents would be like, put it down, talk to people. And it was I just loved being in a story. I think some of it was like inherent shyness, but also it just felt, I could just be transported. I grew up in a small town. Our library was very, very small at the time. In fact, it was an old house. And the kids section was in the very back. And if you put a marble down it, when you go into the front door, it would just immediately, it was so tilted.
Yep.
So it was, reading was just one of those things for me. And I still love it. I read just so many books, so many that I can't always remember the names. I can remember covers.
Terrible.
Terrible. I feel so bad sometimes. I'm like, it's the cover that's kind of bluish, you know, like a swan.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. That's even better than I can do. Sometimes they just all blur together. I'm like, oh, but I loved it. I just love your writing.
Yes, I loved your writing. Can't remember your name, nor the title, really.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But that one scene.
Yeah. Right. Oh, exactly. It stays with you. And isn't that what we all read for? We read for that one scene, the one that stays with us. You're like, oh, I've never seen that before, or I've never had anyone describe that feeling back to me before. That's what
your cover, I feel, is going to be very memorable for people. It is beautiful.
Thank you.
Really beautiful.
Yes. It's so pretty. I feel, when I first looked at it, I was like, oh my gosh, are y'all sure about this? This is such a pretty cover. Yeah. You sure I'm going to save from somebody else? All that whole imposter syndrome just kind of hit me really hard then.
It does. The first like manifestation of your words. Mm-hmm. It's intense.
It is intense.
Okay. I want to talk about writing.
Okay.
Because, well, first of all, Leah is a architect. She's in architecture school.
Yes.
But you do design. Is that correct?
I do. I'm a graphic designer.
Right. In your real life. So
in my real life.
That's right. So where along the way did you know you wanted to write? Did you know you wanted to write a novel? Did you know you wanted to write this novel? Where in your, you know, sketching and your like other mindedness were you like, no, I got to write this?
You know, I've always wanted to write something about my grandmother that featured some of her personality because she was such a big presence. And in fact, my very first short story that I wrote in undergrad featured a character much like my grandmother who goes to a grocery store in America for the first time and is trying to like figure out the money and the food and the people and get back home. It's and I loved that story and I was very proud of it. And then I just kind of put it away, but that character stuck with me, just a version of my grandmother. And she was someone I was kind of obsessed with. And I think that happens when you have someone in your life who sets himself apart just a little bit. Yeah. My other grandmother was like the grandmother that was like, and she knew everything about me. This one, my grandmother, grandmommy, was a little like, she was a little standoffish at times and a little more distant. And then, I think it made me a little more obsessed. I mean, like maybe she did it on purpose. I don't know.
That drew you
I've hooked this one.
Yes, exactly. Let me reel her in.
And I love on your website that you share pictures of, like, the personal pictures that inspired this. And I love that. It gives you, like, the visual for everyone to check out Amanda's website.
Oh, yeah, please do. The photos have been, they were so much fun when I asked for them. I have a few of my grandmother and my dad when he was little, but I asked family members and they started just sending photos and went over to my parents' house and grabbed a whole bunch and then started scanning. And I was like scanning late at night trying to get it done. And I was just like kind of started to cry. I was like, this is my aunt when she was a baby. I was ugly crying at like 3 a.m. scanning photos. So it was a labor of love to get those in there. It was fun.
Oh, I love that.
So when did you know you were writing The Turtle House? Like when did you start this? Like all of a sudden you just thought, I have to sit down. This is the time to write.
You know, I started interviewing my grandmother for stories when I was pregnant with my first child, Megan. And that was 14 years ago because she just had a birthday. And my grandmother had gone through stomach cancer and had slowed down for the first time in her life and was just hanging around. And I was hanging around because I was like waddling around. And so we had some time just in the same home, in the same area. And I bought one of these books that are for like young grandkids to ask your grandparents questions. And I brought it over and I was like, I'm doing this, because she'd always been so reticent to answer any questions. And she'd always be, I'd ask when I was young, what was Japan like? She's like, oh, you know, like Japan. Yeah. And, and I was like, I don't know. But this time, I mean, she had had a brush with death and she was a lot more open. She also knew that I was having a little girl and another great grandbaby in her lineage. And she really liked that. So I got all these wonderful, wonderful stories and I wrote them down. And then life kept on happening. Had the baby, built a house, had another baby. And right after I had Jack, which was about 10 years ago, my grandmother finally passed away. She had been in and out of hospice care. She was pretty feisty up until the day before she passed. And I missed her so much. It felt like there was a hole in my heart. And I had a newborn. And so, once again, it was like postpartum, sleeplessness, missing my grandmother. And so I'd get up in the morning and go, okay, I'm just going to write down what I remember of the story she told me. I'll get the book back out and kind of go through them. And we'll just see what happens, you know. We'll just see. I thought it'd be like linked stories or maybe just, I don't know, nonfiction. I didn't know. And they just kind of took over. Yeah. It was like 5 a.m. till 7 a.m. with a breastfeeding in between.
Yeah.
And yeah, I started writing. So within a few months, I had one half of the novel. And that part hasn't changed much over all these years.
It wow.
stayed intact. Leah's story just kind of shifted and moved around a little bit more. So
interesting. Okay.
I love that. So this is a perfect time then for you to give us the elevator pitch for The Turtle House.
Oh, for heaven's sake. I knew you were going to ask about that.
I know. It's the worst.
It's the worst. Well, The Turtle House, it was inspired by the life of my grandmother, who was a Japanese war bride. It is about two people who come together in unexpected situations and learn from each other and grow so they can move on in their lives. The grandmother and the granddaughter, Leah.
Perfect.
This thing.
Yeah. It's so good. So, and as you've already been talking about, it is inspired by, and even when you started writing it, you weren't sure what it was going to be, this book. But you really did write a beautiful novel, which is not, it is fiction. So did you ever feel hemmed in by the truth of what you had known, or was it just a launching pad for your imagination?
It was a launching pad. And the story that my grandmother told me was so big. It was like being given a huge house or a huge room and being able to move all around it. There were some walls that I didn't even touch in the novel because it was such a big story. And then I got to really flex my fiction muscles because I didn't ask all the questions. There are parts that I would be like riding around writing and then I'd get to a big hole in the sidewalk and I was like, oh my gosh, I should have asked that. Or what happens next? Or I don't understand this part of the culture. And so I'd have to do research or I would just make something up and get over that hole and then just keep on going. And when I did that, it might branch the story out a little bit to the right or to the left. And it was very creative and it was very cathartic. It was a lot of fun.
Yeah. Oh, I like that. You get to fill in, with the imagination.
I get to fill in.
Yeah. So I want to talk about the structure. So you've got your idea and the imagination is soaring, but then there's the novel writing, right? how to structure the story. And you have dual timelines. Leah is preserving her grand mini stories, but she's also got her own mystery unraveling. And both storylines are equally compelling, which is not easy to do.
Thank you.
Yeah. So... when did you know that you had to structure the novel this way? And was it always this way? Or did this happen in editing? Or,
you know, from the get-go, I never felt comfortable just writing one historical piece all in my grandmother's point of view. I felt like because I wasn't her, or I didn't speak the language. I had never experienced the culture firsthand. Japanese culture I have is Japanese Texas, and it's been handed down, and it's just different. And so I felt that I couldn't do it justice. So I always wanted to have another character in there just to help explain and kind of bridge that gap between Japan and Texas. So Leah was invented. Originally, she was a journalist because I was a journalism major. I was like, yeah,
write what you know.
Right. And but throughout the process, I was like, oh gosh, I need something that seems to fit within the theme better. And I'd always been obsessed with architecture. I love homes. I love buildings. My dad built our home that we live in now, and I got to help with that process and figure a lot of stuff out. So it just kind of fit. And as I started writing Leah's story, it blossomed from one place to another. And it was another fun experience, but it was a lot harder because there were no walls around me. I could go anywhere, and I felt like I was sometimes careening out of control, definitely.
Yeah. That is so funny because I would have assumed that her being an architect, it is so fundamental to the story. Mm-hmm. I would have thought that was there from day one. Mm-hmm. And it sounds like it was a rewrite if she was once a journalist.
She was once a journalist because she was capturing these stories, and I thought that was really important. And then there is so much about building and so much about construction, which is, you know, my life experience. My dad has always been in construction, so I know a lot just secondhand about, trim and getting work done in a home and laying a foundation. So, I was like, why didn't I think about this sooner? But, you know, sometimes things just come to you as they come to you.
And it makes sense now that you're saying that. You're right. Like, she's collecting the stories. She is kind of being a journalist for her own life. But the architect works better. I got to tell you, the Turtle House as a device, as a thing I can see, as a part of the story, makes it so special. I love I'm obsessed. I want to go to the Turtle House. I want to swim in the pond. I want to, even as gross as it is on the bottom, I don't care.
It's disgusting, from what I know.
Of course. I don't care. Where did that come from for you? I know that you could draw on your own life experiences and your own personal obsessions even, but where did the idea to have this as the unifying, is a unifying aspect of the novel?
You know, I really think it kind of came out of something my mom used to say. She used to say that my grandmother's house was like little Osaka on the plains. Like her house, it was, you walked in, it looked like a Texas house from the outside, but you walked in, it was pretty Japanese style. Like she really, it was her comfort level, and she wanted it to look and feel like her home. And she didn't meld into the American culture. A lot of war brides came in and just took on different characteristics and was like, okay, the past is behind us, let's keep going. And my own grandmother was not like that necessarily. So I'd always thought how lovely it would be if the outside of her home really matched the inside of her home. Mm-hmm. And I think that's where it started. And then I just started doing some research, and there are just so many beautiful country estates in Japan that are without owners right now, and people are coming in and trying to buy them and fix them up. And I just did a deep dive. I went down the rabbit hole with Hilton and looking at it, I was everywhere. I just can't wait to actually get there and see a home in real life. I sketched it out based on two different homes that I found on the internet. I watercolored it. I made a map of the property.
I was going to ask that if you've actually, with your design mind, if you
I just
did
had
this.
To see it. Wow. Yeah, that's I had great. To see it in real life and like scanned in different plants and things. So it was like kind of almost like a mood board with the map that. In the center. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It was fun. And then I got back to writing because I think I had too much fun doing that.
Yeah, I was going to say that. Yes. Could,
the
that
distractions.
Part.
Yes. Yes. You, right? We go down those rabbit holes. But it really does, I think, add something. When you feel that way, I've always thought that. And I happen to know you. We've never talked about the Turtle House, you know, exactly the way I just asked. But also, we'll ask strangers, like after having read their book, like, what about this one thing? And they're like, oh God, I really obsessed on that. And it just comes, mm-hmm. I do think it comes through that feeling of excitement and mm-hmm. obsession really comes through. And there's just something about an abandoned house and going and finding it. And there is like some sort of adventure, but also mm-hmm. scary because they tell her there's ghosts there. And but she is brave and strong and knows what she wants. And I love that for the character and for the reading experience.
It was great. It was fun imagining the character backwards and what kind of personality traits she would have when she was younger and how life would affect those and change those. So, yeah.
And the ways it wouldn't, too, because she's sitting on the roof when she's living with Leah. She, mm-hmm. I loved Grand Minnie. She was a real force. She reminded me of my grandmother a little bit.
There's, so. I think a lot of, you know, people say, oh, their grandmother is sweet and kind and, you know, baked pies. And my grandmother was not like that. Nah. I think there's more and more people saying that was my grandmother. My grandmother was tough as nails. And so it's been fun hearing other people's grandmother stories, like as I've been talking about the book.
Yeah, for sure. That would that
even
my
I was thinking
the
of your
nails.
Grandmother, Corinne.
Yeah.
I was.
Yes.
I was.
Yeah. Well, Amanda, our writing group is called the Sisterhood.
Yes.
And you know Sisterhood. I know you know it because I've experienced it with you, but also reading this novel just shine through to the complicated, wonderful relationship between Mineko and Fumiko?
Fumiko.
Yeah. Tell us about writing about that, because it's not a central piece of the novel, but it's a thread that feels so strong and durable through the whole thing. And I was really invested in the two of them.
And the friendship there. Yes. Yeah. I wanted to have a friend. My grandmother didn't really have those kinds of close friends when she got to the United States. I know that she had left a lot behind, and I wanted to have a friend for my character to kind of just bounce ideas off of and just to be with, because it would be such a lonely existence without. So I think I drew on every single best friend I've ever had. I was like, okay, she's going to be like this and then also like this. that is the glory of writing, I think. And there's like little bitty character traits. I think all my friends would be go, oh, that's me. Or maybe they won't. Maybe they won't see it at all.
And right.
Yeah.
I've been very tricky about it.
I love that. I love that.
Well, I know you have attended some of the most well-known and prestigious writing programs. And we do love to hear from debut authors about, you know, any classes or workshops or things that they've done. And you certainly have a lot to offer in that. So what do these programs mean to you and to your development of the Turtle House?
I had a master's in creative writing, which was a wonderful program, but I think I learned more on my summer experiences because I had children at home, of course. And so it was my week and 2 days usually away from the family. And my whole year would build up to it. So I'd be writing and thinking and working and applying, getting to that point. And then my whole year would come from it too, because it would be such an inspirational week and I'd leave with all these new ideas and be able to apply them. So it just kind of kept my writing life going. I love them. I love meeting new people. I love being in a new place. I would just search all over and go, okay, which teacher do I want to go to this year? Who looks good? And just find where she or he was teaching and would go for it. Lots of applications that were got the thumbs down. But I just kept applying. And I mean, one of my favorites was one story in Brooklyn, because I had never been to Brooklyn before. I stayed in an Airbnb in Park Slope. I felt like a New Yorker for like 5 minutes. I met so many lovely people. That was a blast. And
that's where you met Grace, yeah?
That's where I met Grace, yes, who's also in our sisterhood as well. Those are so much fun. I think that's my biggest takeaway, or, you know, information for young writers or writers just starting out. Go for it. Apply for those things and get out there for a week and just throw yourself into it, because it really does help. It helps with the confidence. I think the confidence level was what I really lacked, and I needed that. I needed the camaraderie and the rah-rah, you can do this. So. Yeah.
That is a great point. That is true that you get that on those, but you can get, you learn craft, you build relationships, you get the confidence, you have an experience, you get inspiration. I wholly subscribe to going away, retreats, classes, doing things like that. It adds exponentially to the experience, I think.
It was just, I think, especially meaningful because it was apart from everything else that I had done. It was not graphic design. It was not doing laundry. It was not hanging out with my mom and dad. It was not kids. It was fully 100% mine. And I think when you, as a mom with young, especially young kids, it was something that I missed. I missed something being mine.
And you got recognition for it. You don't just, especially the programs you went to, you don't just get to go to those. You have to be selected. And it's a big, huge vote of confidence.
Yes, that someone read something of mine and was like, okay, I see something. And
bring her in.
Reading your own stuff, you're like, oh, sometimes you think it's good, sometimes you think it's trash, and sometimes you're like, well.
Is there something here? What can I salvage?
That's the question I think we asked that the first question at every sisterhood reading is like, is there something?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
But somebody saw something at some point, because you had to get an agent, which is the, after all this is, you know, the harrowing part for a debut novelist. So what was that process like for you?
You know, that was an embarrassment of agenting riches.
That's good.
I know. I didn't see it coming. I met a few agents through different experiences, through Tin House Community of Writers. And so I had names, and they were like, just send me something when you're done. So I got to that, I think I'm done spot. And I sent out, I think my first run, I was like, I'll just do 10. We'll just see what happens, you know. And then I heard back from 7 that they wanted a full manuscript. And then the 7 wanted a meeting. And I was shocked, because
This is not how it goes.
I thought that I would just be sending this out for like months and months, years. Who knew? Mm-hmm. And so when it happened quickly, I was like, oh my gosh. And I spoke to so many wonderful people. Like, agents are the nicest people. I was terrified going into it, I have to say. That was like a sweaty mess doing these calls. But I met Sarah Bolin, who's my agent, and I just knew that she was someone I wanted to work with. She saw the book. She saw things on the page that I wanted to be there that I don't think was quite there yet. And it was great being seen.
Well, that's amazing.
Yes.
And then how long did you work with Sarah before you guys went on submission?
About 6 months. I would say 6 months. I think we signed in October, and we went out in March. So someone do math for me.
About 5 months.
I would have had to use my fingers, so
I was going much faster. I was like, oh, you can see that. That's cool.
And how was that process? Because that, to me, is the real harrowing part. But that was
crazy, too. And that went faster than I thought as well. It went out. So we went on family vacation, my sister and her family, my parents, us. We went to Walt Disney World. It was time for the kids to go see Disney. So it went out at the very beginning of a Disney vacation.
Oh, my God.
I don't.
Which is so smart in the normal world. You're like,
is it?
Right. No, well, yours turned out to not be the normal world. Yours was special world. But
it was crazy. I was like in a line for the sing along for the Let It Go. What is that? Which movie is that? Someone help me.
Yeah.
Elsa.
Yes.
Frozen.
Frozen. Thank you. Sing along with Frozen. And I was talking with my agent. She was like, all right, so-and-so wants it. So-and-so has it. So-and-so wants it. You know, this is what we'll do. We'll sit on this for a little while. And I'm just like freaking out. And I'm like, I'm so sorry. I can't be there to help. And she's like, this is my job. You're not.
Right. Yes. Right. Exactly.
Why can't you be doing the same thing? She's like, just go in there and sing along. Let it go. And I'm like,
Oh, you're funny.
Yeah. So yeah, that was the experience. So by the end of the week, we had had quite a bit of interest. And then I got home and I just repacked my bags and went to AWP. So I was in submission also at AWP, which made me feel also crazy. and yeah, when I got home, we had meetings and it went to auction. And before I knew it, it was sold. And it was a pretty fast process. And I feel like it was just a huge gift.
Yeah.
I don't expect anything like that again.
But that was a while ago, right? Mm-hmm. There was, so you had some time to edit it. What happened in between the book selling and now as it's about to be
bookstores? Well, revision, we did, I did revision with my editor and that was a lot of fun. My editor, Sarah Stein, used to work with my agent, Sarah Bolin, I think at Riverhead many years ago. And so they have kind of similar editing styles, which I really appreciate. They do things in layers. They don't give it all to me at once, like, all right, good luck. Because they probably know that I would choke and just like end up in the pantry somewhere.
Right.
Against the wall. So that was, it was just small bites, you know, okay, work on this part. All right, that's cool. Moving on to the next part. It was just kind of like a layers of an onion, which I loved. I fell in love with revision. I didn't know that I would love it so much. And I have to say, I prefer it to drafting. Because once again, drafting, you're just like, anything can happen. But revision, that story's already there. And it's like rehabbing a house or something. You're like, oh, we've got good bones.
You know? Back to these house metaphors.
And, I know. I'm serious. I think it's, I'm very housey. I watch all the house shows.
Same. I love them. But I don't think that way. So you do have a little something special there because I don't think that way. But I do love them. I love watching, especially like an old house renovation where they're like bringing out what was there. Love
yes.
That. Yeah.
Well, yeah, the house that I live in is it's a Craftsman redo. We lived in a beautiful 1920s Craftsman before that was the money pit, basically. You know, you get something fixed and then something else would break. So my dad was like, listen, we want the grandkids near us. Buy a lot near me, lot near your mom and I, and I'll build you a house that looks old, but with new plumbing, and you'll never have to worry again. And I was like, sold.
That is fantastic.
Yes, I will take that. So
there you go.
I love old.
Love that. Well, a little bit of a cheat with this one. Again, you're a friend of mine, so I know your astrological sign.
And I'm dying over here because I don't know.
And Kate is going to be very happy because we have a fellow Leo.
Oh, yay. Yep.
Leo, all right. August 19th. So I'm kind of towards the end of the Leo reign.
That's right.
Yes, you are. You're close.
Virgo in you, maybe.
That's right. Oh my gosh, I love it. Do you feel Leo? Do you relate to being a Leo?
Yes. Yeah, she's like the most Leo-est Leo that ever Leo'd. Like just,
which is such a Leo thing to say.
Right. Yes, we have like pencils that my friend bought me for my birthday, and it was like, my aura is glitter and rainbows, and like just crazy things. And I was like, oh yeah, those pencils even kind of sound like me. The what everyone's down in like Texas areas into is Enneagram. Y'all heard of the Enneagram?
Of course.
Of course.
Yes.
What are
number
you?
Two.
What? I'm a three. Three, see?
You're three?
Yeah.
Three Leo?
Yeah.
It's the achiever.
Three Leo is a lot. Yeah.
No, did I want to be a three? I was like, oh, I hope not. That just sounds awful. That person sounds tacky. No, I'm a three. I'm like.
Our issue with the Enneagram, like for Corinne and others, it's like, a lot of people feel very conflicted. I'm like, there is nothing not three about me. Like, I don't have
There's no conflict.
It's like there's a million layers of Leo in me. There's no, I have no,
I have no chill.
Yeah.
I have none.
No chill, and no nuance. Yeah.
All my sweet friends are like, oh, I'm the helper. I'm the giver. And I'm like, the taskmaster.
You're the achiever. You will do achiever. You're the achiever.
I love it.
Who has trouble tapping into emotions, apparently. We have them, though, the threes. We do. I'm just saying. We disregard them so that we can do and achieve.
Right.
We feel them. We just immediately cast them aside as useless. We have to get the
irrelevant.
Yeah. 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 And then they hit us like 3 years later.
Of course.
While we're in the grocery store. Yes. Buying soup.
They didn't go anywhere. They're just as Corinne was. We put them in our shelf or a box and then they fall out of the closet and hit you in the head.
Yes. Oh my gosh. Yeah. I did not know you were a 3-2. My goodness, that is absolutely wild. I love it. Yeah. I love it. Well, Amanda, I want to end with two things. One is, what do you hope for this book and for your career as a writer?
Oh gosh. I hope people love the book. I know it sounds so trite, but I hope people read it and tell their friends about it and enjoy it. I wanted to write something that was hopeful. My grandmother's life was hard and it was sad. And this book has a more bubbly, effervescent, like, experience towards the end than my grandmother's real life. It feels like I was giving her a second chance at something that was some happiness. And that was really, really important to me as I was writing. So I hope people enjoy it and just feel some goodness as they're reading it. And tell a friend.
Yes.
And tell another friend.
Well, that you achieved that in spades. It is. You're right. It is a challenging. They're challenging times and challenging things happen. But it is ultimately what I love is the resilience of the human spirit and hope and all of the things that we carry forward that way. Mm-hmm. And I love the relationships with Leah and Grand Minnie and everything we experience through her as well. I just love it.
Yeah. I just think stories are so important that they can really bring community together. And that's what I think I hope for my career is just to keep writing novels that people can talk about and it brings them together in different ways. And I think if I do that, that is, that's my childhood dream come true.
I was just going to say.
You are good at that. I am like hating people and killing people in my novels. I'm like, even when people love the book, they're like, I hated everybody in it, but I loved everything that happened. I'm like, okay, that's more of my thing. I want you to not be afraid of the darkness, but we all have our own thing.
Yeah,
right?
Well, my next one has a body count a little bit. So you're like, I know.
Really?
I think it's a little darker, but it's also historical. So it's fun.
Okay.
It's my agent right now. I'm hoping that it's going well. I mean, she gave me the thumbs up, but I'm waiting for notes. So
okay. Well, thumbs up is very big.
Maybe I like thumbs up.
You should go to Disney, and then I'm sure everything will start happening. Well,
the small world after all. I was on that Peter Pan ride just looking down going, oh, this is not my world. This is crazy.
That's amazing.
And what else are you loving before we head out?
Oh, gosh. Okay, I'm so late to the game on Audible, y'all. I've always been a reader, just like book in front of my face. But over the holidays, my book club assigned a book and I was like, I don't have time to read another one. And so I started listening to it in the car and I am obsessed with listening to books in the car. I cannot believe that I am so
been
late.
Missing out on this.
Same. The two of us are. Oh yeah.
I mean, it makes me want to do things in the car. It makes me want to run the errands that I don't feel like running.
Yep.
I mean, over the holidays, John was like, "Oh, that's my husband." He was like, "We're out of milk," and I was like, "I'll go get it. I'll go get it," because I was so excited to get back in the car and listen to the book.
And I hate to drive more than anything. Like, I hate it. It seems just like a waste of my time. And ugh. And there's. Put on a book, I'm like, I'll drive to however far you want.
Yeah, I know. I'll do it. And in Texas, we have no public transport, really. No, so you drive everywhere. And where the area I live in is just all spread out. So there's lots of driving that happens. It just makes it a happier experience. I can't wait. I'm going on book tour and the Texas parts I'm driving because it's easier. So I cannot wait to listen to books. I want people to tell me which books to listen to.
Oh, I can do that. I can give you some because I think that the narrator matters. I told Corinne, but now does. I know she can ask you too. But for her book, we think that you'll get to maybe hear some narrators, and I'm like, let me listen. I want to weigh in on that.
Kate has to weigh in because
I got to listen to a few of mine and choose. They send you like here's 10 to choose from, and I have a narrator for Mineko and one for Leah, and so it's a blast listening to them. And you just kind of know. I was like, oh, that's That's her. Mm-hmm. So
that's okay. It. So that's what you're loving to Audible.
I'm yes. loving Audible. I'm loving listening to things. And I was so snarky about it. Like, that's not really reading. Y'all. Oh,
I fight people on that. It makes me so mad.
I'm eating
mad.
My words now.
Yeah.
I mean, I understand the people like Corinne who's like, I don't, you know, you might not enjoy it. You'll find it distracting.
Oh, I think it's reading.
Right. Yeah. No, I was going to say, but you're not that. Yeah. The people, I'm like, what are you talking about? Like, that's not even, I don't know how people can make that, the not, that it's not really reading. I mean, you've now written a book. Do you care how people consume it? Right?
No.
Yeah.
No. Listen to it. Yeah. Right. The story is the story. Right. It is, I agree, it's not reading. What I read for is to sit down and immerse myself, like to not be anywhere else. Mm-hmm. But it's still reading in that, like that doesn't make any sense.
It's consuming story.
Yes.
And that's I think
what we want.
I mean, the Enneagram 3 in me and the Achiever loves the fact that I can add to my book count
100%
by listening and reading at the, you know, like, mm-hmm. Love it. I love typing that book in. I'm like, just listen to this. Like, I'm so proud of myself.
I love it. I love it.
I have to ask you now that we are essentially the same here. We had a discussion, Corinne and I, Corinne knows, about keeping track of the books you read. And that's what you made me just think of it. Like, so by doing Audible, I absolutely did up my numbers. Do you keep track of the number of books you read per year, and does the number get a little crazy for you as a three?
Numbers get it crazy for me in general. Like, I am the girl that counts the things, and it's like, it's an issue. But I haven't traditionally kept up with every book that I've read. It was like one more thing to do.
Right.
And then a few years ago, I saw every single Bookstagrammer posting their numbers, and I was like, maybe I should like keep up with it. So now I keep up with it in my phone. I'll like write the month and this, and I don't write about what I read, or like some people just go into detail, and I'm like, name, last name of author, moving on. I do
but
that
it didn't
now.
Become a sickness for you? I'm the exact same thing. I finally was like, I'm going to keep it in my phone. But then once I saw the number, I got to the end of the year and I got crazy, and I had to finish one on like December 31st because I didn't want it to count for the next year. And then I thought that was getting a little
too much. Yeah, I didn't want to have any carryover. So there was it was New Year's Eve, and I was like, oh, I've got three chapters left, and it's like 11:15. I'm exhausted. I'm like trying to get through it.
Thank
because
you.
I wanted to start a brand new book the next day.
Okay.
Okay. Issues. Yeah.
All right. There we go. Our therapy session's over.
Later.
Oh, God. Well, however you consume the Turtle House, consume it, read it, listen to it. It is a beautiful book. I absolutely loved it. It's easily one of my favorites. So
thank you so much. Thank you. Great. It means so much to me.